I know a million people came up to you the other day outside of the movie theater, and I was one of those people. But I'm glad that we were able to get on the phone. So we are talking to Govan Armstrong, chef and author. And I have a lot of questions. Not too many, but I'm curious about a lot of things. The culinary arts, in my eye, have become really popular in the mainstream over the last decade, thanks to networks like Food Network and Bravo, you know, shows like Chopped and Top Chef and Iron Chef. And more now than ever before in my life, I hear young people who are finishing high school and college saying, oh, I want to be a chef. I want to be a sommelier. They're talking about getting into the culinary arts. What was your introduction into the culinary world, and what inspired you to want to be a chef?
Okay, well, it definitely wasn't Bravo, because I think that, I don't even know if there was even cable back in my days, but not to date myself, but yeah, my passion definitely stemmed from just the food itself and working with ingredients. You know, it's like my mother used to entertain a lot and would always have people over to the house, so I was just naturally gravitated towards spending time with my mom and being with her in the kitchen, and we had gardens growing up, and the connection with food was really just something that just came, and it was just sort of a natural thing. It was something that I always appreciated and always enjoyed, and I loved, you know, spending time with my mom in the kitchen, you know, and loved everything from the, you know, even especially like the gardening side of it as well, to actually be able to pull a meal out of the garden and cook it that day. And I was, you know, pretty young, but still able to tell the difference, how much more flavor these vegetables had as opposed to stuff that we would buy in the market. But for me, it was really just a true passion of the raw ingredients and cooking and entertaining and that whole thing that sort of got me started. You know, and then I got my first job, or like the beginning of my career, was when I started with Wolfgang at when I was 13 and working in the summertime with him. And it was pretty much after day one when, yeah, I just knew I was hooked. It really didn't take long. It was really just being in a real kitchen and seeing how things actually worked behind the scenes there that did it for me. It was everything, though, the energy, the product, the camaraderie, the, you know, teamwork, just all of it was just fascinating and addictive.
Okay. I want to get back to the gardening in a second, but I'm just curious, how did a 13-year-old get next to Wolfgang Puck? How did you orchestrate that for yourself?
It was actually at one of the little parties that I was doing for my mom.
Okay.
You know, because basically I took over for her. Sorry.
We're in LA. It's all good.
Yeah, exactly. So true. Yeah, so I really took over and was literally like just catering her parties when I was about 11 or so, and 12 and, you know, 13. I did it for many years. And one of her friends, one of my mother's friend's daughter, just wondered who the caterer was. She really like enjoyed the hors d'oeuvres that we were serving and this and that. And she's like, caterer, you know, it's like it's whatever. He's like, no way. It's like, I thought it was only, you know, whatever, 12 or 13. So they could just go in the kitchen and, you know, whatever. So this woman, Barbara, I can't remember her last name, came in the kitchen and just started laughing. And I couldn't believe it because I really got into it. It's like I would wear the silly chef's hat and like a huge chef's coat that just didn't even come close to fitting me, and big old apron. And the kitchen was always a mess, like just completely destroyed, like wall to wall, floor to ceiling, just a big mess. But, you know, I was still able to get the food out, and she just couldn't believe it, you know. And we just got to talking, and she was just asking me all these questions and why I loved cooking. And I was, you know, I'll just tell her I was just kind of obsessed with it and loved cooking for everybody, my family, my friends. And she's like, then she started telling me about this restaurant that she was working on, and they're going to be opening soon, and the chef, Wolfgang Puck. And I really didn't know who he was at all. You know, it's like I would read like the food section and stuff like that, but it's like I wasn't really tracking any chefs at that age or at that point in my life. So, but she was saying, it's like, yeah, you know, they built out this restaurant and it's beautiful and he used to work here and there. And I'm like, I would love to see it, you know, and this and that. And she went back and told Wolfgang, and he didn't believe it, that there's this kid, you know, in the valley who's making all these great hors d'oeuvres and just totally obsessed with food. And he's like, I want to meet this kid. So she literally set it up, and I believe it was the following, or yeah, it was the following weekend. She took me out there, and that was it. You know, I like walked through the back door, and I was kind of floored, and like I said, pretty much hooked ever since. And you know, Wolfgang took me up in the office, and we talked, you know, for a while. I bought this old recipe book that I'd put together with just a bunch of handwritten recipes and some of the Polaroid pictures that I'd taken of, you know, some of my mom's parties and some of the dishes I would make. And he was just really impressed and said, you know, we were just talking about random stuff and, you know, obviously just about food and like how he got his start. And he was just surprised that I was really, you know, kind of dedicated and just loved cooking for anything. It could be something like a simple grilled cheese or whatever, cooking for my friends. And I was really, really into it. You know, if I got a green onion from the garden, you know, it was like the best grilled cheese ever. But just real funny stuff. And we just, you know, and then at the end of the conversation, he offered me an apprenticeship, which is something that he did not expect whatsoever. And, you know, at that point, it wasn't really a question. It was just a matter of like, when, you know, when can I start? And I believe I started that following, or it was in a couple of weeks once school was out. And that was my summer gig.
Wow.
And that was that was pretty much right when they opened, or soon after they had opened.
Okay. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty lucky, you know. It was definitely one of those things that just lined up, and it was by far, you know, like just a great jump start in a career, or just a great experience, and or just really, I was just really fortunate to get that sort of a break and, you know, have the support of all those people. You know, it's like my mom would pick me up and drop me off every single day, and, you know, and everybody at Spago, at the restaurant, was very patient with me because I was terribly slow at anything that I did or thought about doing. You know, it was like, this is just going to take a while. But everybody was very just supportive and encouraging, and, you know, it was definitely interesting, you know, to be, you know, a 13-year-old in that kind of environment. And, you know, which is everything. It's like all kinds of crazy stuff goes on in kitchens, as you can imagine.
Right.
But I was into it. I was definitely into it.
Okay. Well, you mentioned gardening, and I've mentioned this on the site. I feel like our generation is, like, just one generation removed from true organic living. I remember growing up, because I'm from LA as well, and growing up as a kid, my grandmother had, you know, collard greens and tomatoes and snap peas, everything growing on the side of the house.
Yeah.
And it was part of her, you know, daily
regimen, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
To go out there and to check on things, to pull things, bring them in and cook them. And then, you know, by the time you get down to me, that's not happening as much, you know, if at all. And I know that Post and Beam has the garden in the back. Can you speak a little bit why we need to get back to that, why it's important in regards to just what we eat, why it's important to you as a chef? And if you have a tidbit for somebody who absolutely has no knowledge of how they could start it, where they start in creating their own garden at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the garden was, it's always been important to me. It's always been something that I've embraced and believed in. And I know it's, you know, uber trendy and hip now to be, you know, farm to table or,
right,
you know, carefully sourcing your product. But this is something, like you said with your grandma, this is something that I grew up in. So it really wasn't anything out of the ordinary for me. It was just how and where food came from, you know, and just kind of knowing that. And knowing that it tasted better at a pretty young age was something that I never really deterred from, you know what I mean? It's like, it's, I can tell, I don't know. It was just something that I really appreciated. Something as simple as that, something that was so easy to do, was, you know, that had such a huge impact on my life. So I, you know, the garden at Post and Beam was definitely something that I wanted to do that would be inspiring for locals and for people who come and support the restaurant to sort of see how easy it can be to actually have a working garden. You know, we obviously treat Post and Beam like our home, and it's definitely, you know, with the amount of time we spend there, it is our home away from home. But it's really like a test garden to show people how simple it is to grow stuff. It's like we grow all the herbs for the restaurant there, and it's been a test garden just so we can figure out what we can really produce well there and on a large enough scale to really sort of support the restaurant. But, you know, we started with herbs, and we started with a lot of different lettuces where they, you know, the cut and grow back, and, you know, a lot of greens and stuff like that that were pretty easy to grow. And we did, you know, just like your grandma, it was a lot of sugar snap peas and English peas and all that. And everything has been doing extremely well there. So I think people, you know, with the amount of offerings of fast food and this and that, people sort of, there was a huge disconnect of what food is or where it really comes from or what it tastes like or, you know, what it's supposed to look like. And I think having an example like that in a functioning restaurant that has these philosophies of utilizing this type of product is only going to encourage people to, you know, if anything, ask questions, you know, and try and really train their palate to, you know, be a little more refined and to try and look for the simplicity in, you know, something as simple as a carrot and why this carrot looks this way and why it's so much sweeter than, you know, a conventionally grown, you know, table carrot that's grown, you know, to look identical and be mass produced in China or wherever. You know what I mean? It's,
right.
It's just really one of those things to just remind people how simple it is. And I've, you know, I've lived in some challenging locations where it's not so easy to grow stuff, where I didn't have a backyard or a front yard or anything. And, you know, no matter where I've lived, I've always grown something, you know, and it's like, you can get like a simple wine box, a wine crate, and put some topsoil in there and literally, you know, go to your local farmer's market. And if you don't want to bother like propagating seeds, just go buy some starters, you know, the little plants of basil and some parsley and whatever you find yourself using when you cook already. And just all you do is add water, you know what I mean? And it's like something so simple that I think once people actually start doing that, and even on a small level like that, it becomes very addictive. It's very calming. It's something that I do every morning. I go, it's the first thing I do right after I make my coffee. Thank you very much. So I guess it's the second thing I do is go and just sit out in the garden and, you know, look around and see who's eating what. You know, it's like mine's a completely organic, so I don't put any sort of pesticide in there. And I don't know, just sort of have a look. I snip some herbs. I just do a little bit of maintenance, and it's just so good for the head, and it just sort of gets you in the right place to sort of deal with the daily grind, you know, whatever that may be. And it's like, I know everybody's has, you know, some challenges in their life.
Right.
But I think starting off that way is a good way of sort of centering oneself.
Not so long ago, you opened Post and Beam here in Baldwin Hills, Lavert Park area, after closing 8-Ounce Burger Bar, which I loved, by the way. That turkey burger with collard greens was magical. yeah, I've been trying to recreate that here at home. My greens texture is not coming out the way it's supposed to.
Not quite there, huh?
Doing something wrong.
We'll work on that.
Thank you. But I wanted to know, what was your original concept for Post and Beam, and why did you choose to bring it to this community? And then in addition to that, it's been labeled our neighborhood's fine dining establishment. What distinguishes fine dining from other restaurant experiences?
Okay, the reason, that's a big question. didn't know where to start with that one. Yeah, well, the whole thing with 8 ounce, that was, you know, unfortunately, I split with my business partner at the time, and for legal issues, I couldn't reopen in that location, and there was just a lot of bad baggage and stuff like that. So, you know, there's still six other 8 ounces that I'm opening and still opening, and the next one is going to be at LAX.
Nice.
Should be this coming fall in Terminal 4. But, you know, Brad and myself, we've known each other for quite some time, and had always talked about, you know, possibly doing something together, or, you know, just doing a cool concept or something. Somehow, how we could work together. And he, I guess, it was definitely friends with Ken Lombard, and Ken had presented, you know, the Golden Bird, basically, to Brad, and Brad didn't quite know Baldwin Hills, but he had, you know, called me up that I had an interesting location. What do you think about Baldwin Hills? And I'm like, I love it. You know, it didn't take me long. You know, I'm like, I think it's phenomenal. It's like, where exactly? You know, and we met up at the space later that day, and I just kind of, you know, seeing through it and being somewhat of a visionary. You know, the Golden Bird was what it was, and, you know, they had a great run, and it's a great little chain. But seeing through that and just seeing the potential of not only the location, but the proximity to Culver City and other sort of little communities that are actually thriving and have a pretty good culinary scene, it was kind of a no-brainer. It's like the tricky part was going to be how to do something cool and unique and still keep it approachable and still keep the prices where they need to be in order to, you know, in order to be successful and in order to keep the restaurant full and do what we have to do to make it a sustainable business. And in that, you know, I think the first conversations that Ken and Brad had was they wanted to do just a very simple pizza concept, which I was totally, you know, I think it sounds great, blah, blah, blah. But as we, you know, the more time we sort of spent on this, developing the project and developing the concept, it became a little more refined and I wouldn't say like fine dining. We really wanted to be sure that we were going to stick true and stay pure and try and remain a casual eatery. So, you know, it started off as a simple pizza concept where we actually weren't even going to have servers. You know what I mean? It's going to be like a walk-up type pizza, keeping it super casual and, you know, maybe beer and wine, and that was kind of it. And then, you know, once I started really looking at the plans, I'm like, you know, we really should do something different. And once I looked at the space, you know, it's like, I'm like, well, why don't I, you know, instead of just having a pizza oven and this and that, why don't I, you know, put a little grill in and, you know, some burners, and maybe we can sort of expand the menu and do something other than just pizza. And, you know, and salads and stuff like that. So that's where things started, and that's where things really started to roll, because I'm like, okay, what would be an ideal restaurant that would sort of have enough offering to cater to, you know, anybody, if it was a shopper at the mall who did want to just grab a pizza, to someone who wanted to make an evening of it and come in and have, you know, a nice little grilled octopus starter and, you know, a nice little steak dinner and be able to choose some sides, or, you know what I mean? So it really, I sort of expanded the menu to do more, but still to not try and do too much and just do what we can really execute well in that small space there. So it, you know, so immediately, you know, it's definitely going to be some nice salads and some nicer interesting appetizers, and then not just the pizzas. I wanted to do some larger plates, and that's where, you know, I'm pretty good about sourcing out the proteins, and we have, you know, just like one really good steak that's not fatty and this and that, it's on the leaner side, so that, well, you know, who's not going to love that? And, you know, one chicken dish, and it's like I wasn't going to do fried chicken, so I decided to do like a cast iron chicken, which would still be really nice and crisp, but I'm not throwing anything in the fryer. and, you know, and then the whole sides as well. It's like I wanted to, for me, that's like my perfect way to dine is to go in. I want a good steak and I want a couple things to sort of go with it so I'm not eating all protein, you know what I mean? So anything to sort of break that up. And that's sort of how I engineered that part of the menu was to have a bunch of different sides that were going to be changing a lot more frequently now. And people can sort of pick and choose, you know, what they want to go with their entree. And I think, you know, giving people those kind of options is not something you get at a lot of restaurants. But I think now just with people, you know, watching those shows and being a little more savvy when it comes to what they're eating and where it's coming from, it's like people still want options, you know. It's like even if, you know, the recession is still happening and this and that, it's like people still want to go out. People still want good service. They still want quality, you know what I mean? But they don't, they definitely don't want to pay for it. So, so in that, it definitely, you know, became tricky with the pricing. So, you know, whatever. We've definitely figured it out and definitely making a lot of people happy. So,
absolutely. I have to say, as a consumer, one, I'm glad that you expanded the menu beyond pizza, even though I know the sort of pizza that you offer isn't like anywhere else. But my husband and I moved from Mid-City to Leimert. We bought a house here a couple years ago, and we were just, it was almost, even though we're both from L.A., it was like, God, the only thing we can order if we don't want to go out or cook is pizza. That's our only option around here.
It's just not right.
It's crazy. It's not right at all.
No, because it's like people need, and it doesn't matter what community or where they're living. It's like you need to be able to eat. You need to be able to walk to a decent restaurant and get a meal. And it doesn't necessarily, you know, it shouldn't be a McDonald's and it shouldn't be, you know, Le Bernardin. It's like people need to, you know, have a local little restaurant that they can hang out in or meet people in or, you know, just keep it casual or make it an evening of it. And that was sort of the premise for this, was to, you know, offer something which is definitely sticking to my formula of keeping things seasonal and keeping it as ingredient driven as possible. And, you know, and fun. It's like, you know, it's like we weren't going to do like a white tablecloth kind of restaurant. You know, it's just not my style, nor is it Brad's style. And it's like, I don't think that's what was really needed. So this, you know, so Post and Beam is what really I felt as being the missing link in that community. It's like there's definitely, you know, some good offerings, but it's like there's really nothing that was cool and or funky or independent, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and everyone's definitely have been appreciating that, and it's been really nice to sort of, you know, walk in the dining room and people just saying thank you. And it's like they definitely enjoy the food, which is always nice, but they're like, no, thank you for being here, thank you for doing this, thank you for offering this to us, you know. So it's really been really nice, really just genuine.
It's awesome because we've had, you know, restaurants aside, many businesses open here and leave, or businesses that just don't want to come here, you know, and it's truly not fair. So many families and you know, kids here that parents want to expose to different offerings, and it's sad that we're so limited. So you all definitely brought an aspect of diversity in the food culture that we did not have here before. So I too thank you. I have one last question for you because I know you're busy. I've noticed, thanks to Bravo and Food Network and all these other shows, that the culinary world is a lot more diverse than I imagined. But I definitely noticed that there aren't a whole lot of black chefs, definitely not a lot of women. Are there a lot of challenges that you face as a black chef, and not just so much by your colleagues, but by consumers as well? Do people have specific expectations of you just based on culture and ethnicity?
Yeah, you know, that's always an odd one. It's like I couldn't tell you why there are not more black chefs or black cooks or, you know, even black servers. It's just something that doesn't really make sense to me. It's like I wish there were. It's an amazing career. It's a lot of fun. It's definitely a lot of work, but I've traveled all over the place and met some incredible people and just had great experience because of what I do. And yeah, it's just really rewarding. And, you know, you definitely make money at a you know, at a certain level. It's not, you know, those first years are kind of brutal, or those first decades or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I think that's kind of where the disconnect is from some of these kids that, you know, do watch these shows, and they're like, I want to be that guy. It's like they come, they'll like check in at like Cordon Bleu or whatever and come out ready to, you know, ready to audition without knowing how to, you know, without knowing how to saute a piece of fish. So it's kind of slightly works in to our disadvantage at times. But, you know, and I've never really quite understood that. And what was the second part of your question? I'm sorry.
Do you find that you face challenges or have expectations made of you by not only colleagues but by consumers because you are a Black chef? Like, they expect that you're going to present them with a certain thing? Are you ever,
well,
is that ever,
know,
an issue?
It really hasn't been. There's people do question, you know, it's like I have an interesting background. It's like my mother was born and raised in Costa Rica, and I actually grew up there for a bunch of years myself. But, you know, then my grandfather was born and raised in India, you know, it's where my name comes from. And, you know, but none of these, none of that part of my heritage really comes out in what I do. You know, people do question, it's like, oh, you know, it's like, what kind of food are people who don't know me? It's like, you know, what kind of food do you do? It's a Caribbean food, and maybe it's my hair too, you know, I don't really know. But sometimes they do expect certain things that are not really my, you know, in my genre, in my style of what I do. But never in really like a negative way.
Okay. I was just curious. And before I let you go, I just want you to know, please, whatever changes you make to the menu, do not get rid of that black eyed pea and yams and bacon.
Got it.
Don't
is,
get rid of that at all.
Don't touch it, right?
Just go ahead and pair that with some collard greens and make that a lunch special.
Yeah, and you're good. You're in there, right?
That dish is amazing. I could eat it by the bowl full.
So
it's amazing. Thank you so much for your time, Govan.
You're very welcome. And give me a heads up before you come in next time to make sure I'm there.